Hello and good morning. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. It's midterm madness. Voters heading to the polls tomorrow might be surprised to be greeted by members of the military. National Guard cyber forces are reportedly being deployed to 14 states. And Joe Biden's Department of Justice officials are planning to head to even my home county. We'll talk about that at the top of the show. Plus, Saturday Night Live actually did something funny for once. Can you believe it? The only thing is, I'm pretty sure that the left wasn't laughing. I've got the clip, and I'll play it for you a little bit later on the show. You don't want to miss that. Then at 7:30 this morning, Corey DeAngelis will be joining me to discuss where education reforms will be at on the ballot across the country. After government mismanagement of the education during the pandemic, school choice has won over a new generation of voters. And then at 8 a.m. this morning, Scott Faughn of the Missouri Times joins me to discuss the latest and greatest in midterm madness, where Missouri's at, and he'll enter the marijuana Thunderdome. Yeah. Whoa. Should be fun. Enter Thunderdome. All right, Tina Turner. Plus at 8:20 this morning, a very special treat for you. My buddy Squiggly Line Guy will be joining us on the show today to talk about Elon Musk's reign of terror. Yes, two celebrities were banned from Twitter for impersonating Elon online. I thought that Elon said that comedy was legal on Twitter now. More drama and fun to be had when Squiggly joins me later on this very special pre-election episode of the Wake Up America show with Austin Peterson. All right, before we get started, real quick, couple of house cleaning things. Just want to let you know our YouTube experiment is going great. We've been continuing on with our YouTube Blitz, where I ask all of our live listeners and viewers, again, those who are listening to us live, viewing us live, if you're listening to us later on the podcast, of course, like, subscribe, comment over on YouTube would be great too. But we're getting very close to monetization. We're just creeping up there. We're at now 3,344 public watch hours, and we're trying to get to our 4,000 required before we can get to monetization on YouTube. So thank you to everyone who has been watching and liking and subscribing on the show over there. We're grateful to have you helping us out over on YouTube. Good morning. Good morning, everyone who loves the show. Appreciate you all very much. Rare Camellia, good morning to you. Good morning, Goatfoot. Good morning, Albert Krockenfels. Yes, we've got some great, great show today. Great lineup. That's right. Squiggs, Scott, and Corey. It's going to be a great show today. All right. But first, big news. This was sent to me from a friend of mine. The National Guard is going to activate cybersecurity teams in 14 states ahead of midterm elections. That's usually not good. 38 National Guard units provide support against issues like network assessments and risk mitigation. Risk mitigation. Not sure about that one. The decision to have teams ready for support has become a familiar one, reports Fox News, over the past few elections. After the claims of Russian interference started during the 2016 presidential election, Air Force Major General Rich Neely said that cyber's that new domain. It's a man-made domain. Our goal is to make sure that we have elections as secure as possible. We are really at the beginning stages of this, said Air Force Major General Rich Neely. Now, National Guard cyber forces have provided support in 8 states during the primary elections earlier this year, and they're reportedly prepared to protect the integrity of the midterms if necessary. Now, if you live in any of these 14 states, then you are likely to see National Guard cyber cops on duty. North Carolina, Arizona, Pennsylvania, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, Hawaii, Illinois, Louisiana, New Mexico, New York, Washington, and West Virginia. The report is that National Guard officials are going to be working with and receiving security updates from the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. This is the key agency that is tasked with protecting election infrastructure against cyber threats, at least according to Politico. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out, but a little bit closer to home, specifically in my home county, something suspicious, something wicked this way comes. Missouri Secretary of State Jay Ashcroft posted on Twitter about 14 hours ago an email that was sent from Biden's Department of Justice to one of our election authorities. So the county clerk in Cole County, where I live and reside and where this show is being broadcasted from. The county clerk is a gentleman by the name of Steve Korsmeyer, who received an email from the Department of Justice. Listen to this. This is from Assistant United States Attorney Charles M. Thomas, who wrote to Steve Korsmeyer and says that he's working with the Disability Rights Section of the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice. We wanted to let you know we will be reviewing Cole County's voting program on site on Election Day. There will be four Department of Justice staff, including me, working in two teams. One team would like to come by your office on Monday, today, to just briefly touch base. Is there a time that would be convenient for you? He continues on, for Election Day, we would appreciate if you could identify for us the election official we should touch base with at each polling place. For example, who would be that election judge? Also, if you would please let the election officials know, we'll be visiting each polling place and have a few questions for them that may assist in making the visits go smoothly. Rest assured, we understand you will be administering the election and we will try to minimize the time spent on each side. Sure. Please let me know if you have any questions, blah, blah, blah. Now, Secretary of State Jay Ashcroft is not pleased with this. He says that while the United States Department of Justice could clearly learn a lot from Missouri about nonpartisanship and how to administer accessible, secure, and credible elections, he says it would be highly inappropriate for federal agents to violate the law by intimidating Missouri voters at the polls on election days. This is big news. And honestly, I'm kind of shocked that this isn't bigger news today, what's happening here in Cole County, which is why I'm talking about it here on this show. It's something that we need to be on high alert. Missouri Secretary of State Jay Ashcroft seems to think that the Biden administration Department of Justice could be attempting to engage in intimidation of Missouri voters at the polls on Election Day. Now, Jay Ashcroft continued on in this thread and said that under Missouri law, the local election authority is empowered to decide who, other than voters and poll workers, may be at polling locations. Cole County Clerk Steve Korsmeyer has rightfully declined to allow this overreach, and the Secretary of State's office fully supports him. Yeah, go Steve. Very much like that, very much. What do you think about that? You can send us a text on the show at 573-319-1586. Are you concerned about election integrity this year? I'll tell you, I was reading an article this morning about how a lot of people who thought that the Joe Biden election, the 2020 election, was not properly decided, are now running for office. They're running for Secretary of State positions across the country. A lot of Republicans who were concerned about the integrity of our elections are stepping up. They're running for county clerks in their counties. They're running for Secretary of States, and that's what you're supposed to do. And it's freaking the left out, to be quite honest, that the Republicans have taken such an interest in the election process. But that's what happens. You know, after 2020, when people lost so much confidence in the integrity of our elections, and I just read an article today on the Daily Wire about Indiana, there was a man who was thrown out of being an election, election judge, I believe, because he had preset all of the voting machines in his district to be straight line Democrat. And so they kicked him out from being an election judge. He's no longer allowed to manage the voting machines in his county. Yeah, this was just this morning. I'm reading from the Daily Wire. You can wonder why people are feeling a little bit concerned about the state of our elections. Daily Wire, I should have pulled that article up for you, but Daily Wire election, Indiana Democrat. Yeah, I'm not going to be able to pull that up just for you while you're live. I had it up there earlier, but Missouri Secretary of State office sent out a tweet saying to the Biden administration's Department of Justice officials who are trying to come to Cole County, if the DOJ desires to meet, discuss this matter further, they may meet in my office instead of trying to bully a hardworking county official. Dang, got to give it to Jay Ashcroft there. Missouri's got a great Secretary of State, Jay Ashcroft. And I'll tell you this, too. The rumor is that he is going to be running for governor here in the state of Missouri. Definitely something that you want to keep an eye out on, because Jay Ashcroft, very good, very conservative candidate. So what do you think is going to happen in the midterm elections tomorrow? Do you think it's going to be a red wave, or do you think that the Democrats will be able to hold it off? You know, candidates in key battleground states are made their last pitches. In these final hours up to the election day, GOP's prospects are continuing to brighten. Jessica Taylor, who is a Senate and governor's editor for the Cook Political Report, and they're, you know, supposed to be nonpartisan. Whenever somebody says they're nonpartisan, I just assume that they're either, you know, liberals or Democrats or whatever. But Republicans are seen by analysts at the Cook Report as the favorite to take the House majority on Tuesday. And all of the polls that are starting to come out, and the Wall Street Journal is reporting that key voting blocks are starting to trend away from Democrats. As many are saying that their top concerns that are driving them to the ballot box are inflation and economic uncertainty. Now, Senate control, and that's key, that remains a toss-up, but polls are showing that GOP candidates in states like Arizona and New Hampshire and Pennsylvania have been making gains in the final weeks. Now, Democrats are also working to hold on to governor's offices, like in Oregon and in New York, where Kathy Hochul has had a big challenge from Lee Zeldin. And those states were once seen, of course, as safely Democratic, but have actually been competitive this year. Now, Jessica Taylor said that there's many Democrats who wish that the election was held even a month ago. It seems the closer that we get to Election Day, there is a deterioration for Democrats. Definitely something that we want to keep an eye on. And I think it has a lot to do with, again, this Wall Street from the Wall Street Journal. The Republican Party is gaining support amongst Black and Latino voters. It's so fascinating. Republicans actually appear to be in a better position with both groups heading into the midterms than they were in 2020 or 2018. What is this? The Republican Party is winning support from a larger share of Black voters than in recent elections, and they've improved their standings among Latino voters. You heard me talking about this last week. About 17% of Black voters said that they would pick a Republican candidate for Congress over a Democrat in the Wall Street Journal's polls that they ran both in October and in August. This is a lot larger than the 8% of Black voters who voted for former President Trump in 2020 and the 8% who backed Republican candidates in 2018 House races. So from 8% during the Donald Trump election in 2020 to now 17% who say that they would vote for a Republican candidate. So, you know, we're talking about doubling of African-American support here. Now, among Latino voters, Democrats held a lead of 5 percentage points over Republicans in the choice of a congressional candidate in the Wall Street Journal's October survey. That's a narrower advantage than Democrats' 11-point lead that they had in August. So results of the 2020 presidential election showed a meaningful move among Latino voters towards Mr. Trump and the GOP. But evidence that preferences among Black voters shifted has been a little bit mixed. So there's a lot of suspense ahead of this year's contest. How do you think it will go? I'd love to hear from you. Follow me on Twitter at AP4Liberty, because guess what? That big news that I've been telling you about, I thought we were going to have to wait until tomorrow. Nope. Turns out we're going to find out today. Well, I already know. Some of you actually already know, like one or two of you, but everybody's going to know later today. How do you find out the news? Well, probably the easiest, fastest way, follow me on Twitter at AP4Liberty, because I'll drop the news probably at 1 p.m. Central, 1 or 2 p.m. Central-ish. So it's going to be a great day. Very exciting week. Are you excited? I'm excited. All right, we'll be back with more of the Wake Up America Show at wakeupamericashow.com. Good morning, it's 7:21. You're watching, listening, and hanging out with live AP. That's me. I'm Austin Peterson. How are you? Who are you? What are you doing here? How did you get in here? I'm not wearing any underwear. Underwear? Under there. Welcome to the show. Glad to have you here. It's a little wild. It's a little weird. Maybe I should write for SNL. Although I actually saw over the weekend a funny SNL clip, if you can believe it. Let's go over to our Twitter weirdness scene. Take a listen to this. So watch and react to Saturday Night Live actually doing something funny.
Are you feeling tired and worn down? Yes. Sick of the endless grind at work?
Yes.
Exhausted by your family, desperate for some peace and quiet?
Daniel! Your kids want you!
Then ask your doctor. about COVID. By simply getting COVID, you're guaranteed a 5 and sometimes even 10-day vacation from all of life's problems.
I needed a break, just some time away from everyone. So my doctor suggested I get COVID, and it was the greatest week of my life. All I wanted was to sit on the good part of the couch and watch the Netflix I want to watch.
Wait, now, pause. Grandma killers, science deniers, anti-vaxxers.
I was finally able to, thanks to COVID.
At first, I was worried about getting COVID, but my doctor assured me it's fine now. I'm triple vaxxed.
It's fine.
Quadruple if you count HPV.
So I'm fine now. The doctor says it's fine now. Oh, yeah, it's fine now. It used to be the end of the world, but now it's fine now. And I'm triple vaxxed. 4 if you count HPV. Good stuff. Good stuff. Continue.
Side effects of COVID include having COVID, which is still kind of bad, but doesn't it seem different now?
Yeah, it does seem kind of. It's still kind of bad, but doesn't it seem different now? I love this. Whenever SNL actually decides to do comedy, it's usually the very rare times that they actually take a little jab at the left. Pun intended.
Got paid for 10 days to never leave a blanket. Plus, I got a great story I could tell people at work.
It was like I had a bad cold for 3 days.
Oh, whoa.
And of course, I had to isolate from my 3 kids because I didn't want to get them sick.
But what do they eat?
I gave it 14 days to be extra safe.
And for an extra fee, we'll knock out the Wi-Fi near your house so you can't do any Zooms.
Oh, well, too bad.
COVID is the perfect way to get out of jury duty, cousin's wedding, friend's improv show, neighbor's adult baptism, and husband's murder trial. At this point, COVID is basically a 10-day cruise, which is also a great way to get COVID.
COVID isn't for everyone. That's why there's also new COVID Always Positive Home Test. The only COVID test that comes with 2 pink lines already drawn on. Again?
But you just had it a week ago.
Please don't do this to me.
COVID. Because sometimes the only way to get mentally healthy is to get physically sick.
And sure, there might be long-term memory problems, but that would honestly be amazing because there's so much I want to forget.
My brain's already really bad. If it gets 10% worse, but I don't have to talk to a single person for a week, I'll take that deal in a horse beat.
You mean a heartbeat.
Either way, thanks, COVID.
Thanks, COVID. Thanks, COVID. I think I'll get COVID again. Today.
COVID, go ahead. You deserve a break.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Can you believe it? SNL actually did a little bit of comedy. That is pretty funny stuff if you missed it. Yeah. Well, we need a good laugh after all of the weirdness and craziness that we've had. Did you guys see this clip of Donald Trump taking a jab at Ron DeSantis? Oh, yeah. This is pretty wild. So Trump took a jab at DeSantis just ahead of the midterms. I thought this was kind of wild, a little bit weird. Former President Donald Trump mocked Republican Florida Governor Ron DeSantis by calling him Ron DeSanctimonious at a campaign rally on Saturday. Let's head on over and take a listen to that and see what former President Trump had to say.
Ron DeSanctimonious at 10%. Mike Pence at 7. Oh, Mike's doing better than I thought.
Whoa, wait a minute. So what's the context here now?
Trump at 71. Ron DeSanctimonious at 10%. Mike Pence at 7. Oh, Mike's doing better than I thought.
Okay, yikes. All right, so what are we talking about here? So Trump made this attack in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, while he was reading from a poll that was conducted shortly after the FBI's raid at Mar-a-Lago in August. Trump was talking about how, in terms of like Republicans choosing the next candidate, he said he was at 71, Ron DeSanctimonious at 10%, Mike Pence at 7%. And then, of course, he took a jab at Mike Pence saying Mike Pence is doing better than I thought. Now, the former president is saying has not yet indicated, even though he's not yet indicated that he intends to run, you know, DeSantis is kind of seen as Trump's main challenger for the Republican nomination in 2024. Fascinating stuff. Now, this is a poll from the Daily Caller. This is not my words, okay? This is from the Daily Caller. So those who are going to be like, Austin, you're taking a jab at Trump. This is not me taking a jab at Trump. This is literally the Daily Caller, Tucker Carlson's former newspaper, taking a jab at Donald Trump. It says, polls show, and there's a link to the polls, that less educated Republicans tend to favor Trump, while Republicans with college degrees prefer DeSantis. That's kind of a big thing to drop. Just as a, it's like the last sentence in this paragraph. And the Daily Caller just drops that and then moves on. And I'm like, wait a minute here. Hold on. How are you going to move on from that? You just drop this sentence here saying that less educated Republicans tend to favor Trump. Republicans with college degrees prefer DeSantis. Now, I'm not trying to just make a jab here on my own, but I'm just going to say it. All right. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. Okay. I don't care that you broke your elbow. No. If less educated Republicans tend to favor Trump, and listen, I'm a Republican. I'm a college educated Republican. So I guess I'd prefer DeSantis, but I mean, that probably means that Trump's going to win. Or I'm not just trying to take him a jab at my own party here, but I mean, you know, we're talking about the masses, though. The masses. You know, the most people are educated. All right, we probably need to just move on to education. Let's talk to Corey DeAngelis about education, getting educated. Is our children learning? We'll talk about that when we get back with Corey DeAngelis. Yeah. Okay, Austin, time to get out of here. All right, let's move. And we're back. Good morning. It's Austin Peterson. Thanks so much for tuning into the show. Appreciate y'all going on standby there for a little bit while I got my next guest, who is totally worth waiting for, Corey DeAngelis, who's going to talk to us about where education choice will be at on the ballot this year in the midterms. Let's talk to Corey now, joining us live and on camera. Good morning, Corey. How are you, sir?
Hey, Austin, doing well. Thanks so much for having me.
Yes, thanks so much, Corey. I've been excited to see you making your way around the country, fighting for education choice. Certainly it's become an enormous issue in the last couple of years as more and more children we've seen have suffered the negative consequences of the mismanagement of our education policy. It's led to sweeping victories for governors in places like Virginia and elsewhere. And now with less than 24 hours until the midterm elections will be decided, Corey, where is education reform or school choice or our best prospects for progress in education at on the ballot?
Yeah, look, you're right. We've already seen some victories, including in places like Virginia, where Glenn Youngkin won on the issue of education in a state that went 10 points to Biden just the year before. When we're looking at the midterms this year, I've been looking at the governor's races. I mean, these governor's races could lead to drastic education reform in certain places like Wisconsin. So you have incumbent Tony Evers, for example, a Democrat, vetoed a ton of education reform bills, including school choice for all earlier this year. It would have expanded kind of like in Arizona, where they have every family, regardless of income, can take their kids' education dollars to the public, private, or charter school of their choosing. Tony Evers was sent a bill to do that. It was vetoed. And Real Clear Politics projects that Evers is going to lose to his Republican opponent, Tim Mickles, who's a huge supporter of school choice. So that would be a major shift in education freedom. Looking at Arizona, you have Carrie Lake. She's a staunch supporter of education freedom. She wants to expand, even though Arizona has the gold standard of school choice with all families eligible. She wants to increase the amount of funding that follows the child. Right now, it's just the state funding. Well, there's also local funding as well that the public schools currently get to keep in Arizona. So that would be a shift, a race that I'm watching tomorrow night. One of the biggest upsets, which would be, I think, even bigger than the Glenn Youngkin victory, would be Tudor Dixon in Michigan. She's running against Gretchen Whitmer, the Democrat incumbent, who locked down businesses for such a long time and even lied during the debate, the final debate, about how long schools were closed. She said kids were only out for 3 months. Kids were only out of school for 3 months. And that's just verifiably false. And even if it were true, it came off as if she was downplaying the damage done to kids by keeping them out of school for so long. Looking at congressional seats, I mean, look, I think Republicans might have a red wave that's so big that they take both chambers, the Senate and the House. Obviously, Joe Biden would still be president. So not much is going to change at the federal level on the school choice front. And most of the action on school choice that's important anyway is at the state level. Even if we did have all three branches with GOP control, then You know, the federal funding of K-12 education is only about 8 or 9% of the total pie. So you get more bang for your buck if you're focusing your efforts at the state level anyway.
Certainly a good argument for paying attention to what's going on in your state and local politics. If you're just tuning into the show, we're speaking to Corey DeAngelis about where education choice might be on the ballot. He's pointing to a lot of these gubernatorial races. I thought it was interesting, Corey, this was a big story last week. It was the article in The Atlantic by Emily Oster, where she was calling for what she called a pandemic amnesty. You're already shaking your head. But one of the big issue that she admitted that her and other liberals and Democrats were wrong about was how they handled education, was how they handled schooling. So, Corey, are you prepared to grant Emily Oster amnesty on this issue?
I'm definitely not granting Randy Weingarten and the teachers unions amnesty for holding children's education hostage to secure multiple multi-billion dollar ransom payments from the taxpayer. I mean, look, you had private businesses fighting to reopen. You had the private schools fighting to reopen. In California, you had a Christian private school in Sacramento that even rebranded itself as a daycare to open, to get around the government's stupid regulations that applied to closing schools, but not daycares, because for whatever reason, COVID could get you if you're learning something in that same building. But if you were just at a daycare, it was totally fine. I mean, the private schools, private businesses, they all wanted to reopen because they knew if they had to keep their doors closed, they might have to remain closed for good. The public schools knew that they can get your money regardless of the tax system, but it was even worse because they knew that they could get financial benefits from remaining closed. They could say, oh, we're closed because we don't have enough money, even though we spend over $16,000 per kid per year, much higher than average private school tuition. So no pandemic amnesty, especially because the other side doesn't want to forget, doesn't want to admit that they did anything wrong. Until then, we shouldn't even talk about pandemic amnesty. And look, I think Democrats want this to happen right now, and they're trying to distance themselves from the school closures because they don't want to lose on Tuesday. They don't want to lose tomorrow. And they know that keeping the schools closed is deeply unpopular at this moment, and no one's forgetting what happened. Parents haven't forgotten. Parents were right there with their kids. And the one side benefit, though, of the closures was that parents got to see that they were sending their kids to institutions that were brainwashing them to hate them for 13 years, which is another part of the conversation as to why support for school choice has jumped so much in recent years, is that parents got to see another dimension of school quality, which is whether that school's curriculum aligns with their values. And look, Vodi Bakum said it best. We got to stop sending our kids to Caesar and then acting surprised when they come back as Romans. Parents saw that their kids were coming back as Romans, or they were at least learning things that weren't aligned with their values, and families are pushing back. They're a new special interest group when it comes to K-12 education. Forever, it was just the employee unions, but now the kids have their own union and they're called parents. But the only way that things are ever going to change, if those parents show up at the school board meetings, but then continue to show up at the ballot box tomorrow on Tuesday, they need to hold politicians accountable so that this never happens again. Maybe then we can think about pandemic amnesty, but you need some accountability at the same time.
I love that quote. Don't be surprised when you give your children to be educated by Caesar that they come back as Romans. I like that quote. I think I like, it reminds me a little bit of another quote that I like from Malcolm X, who said, never let your enemy teach your children. If you're just listening to the show and tuning in now, we're speaking to Corey DeAngelis. Corey is the senior fellow at School Choice Now, and a senior fellow at the Reason Foundation. Corey, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about a headline that you shared on your Twitter account at DeAngelis Corey, where it said that you say that school choice is a rising tide that lifts all boats. You call it a win-win solution. What do you mean?
Yeah, competition works in K-12 education just like it does in every other sector, every other industry. When parents get a choice to choose the education that works best for their kids and aligns with their values, and the money follows the child, we'll suddenly have bottom-up accountability. The public schools up their game in response to competition. And there have been 28 studies on this topic. That's all that there, that this is the total number of studies. And 25 of the 28 studies find statistically significant positive effects of private school choice on public school outcomes. The competition is a rising tide that lifts all boats. It's a win-win solution. And obviously the families who get a choice benefit. That's why they're making the choice. But the kids who remain in the public schools, their outcomes improve as well. And there's been a small subset of studies, about five of them, that I've written about in a blog at the Washington Examiner called School Choice Benefits Teachers Too. All five of the studies find that private and charter school competition lead to higher teacher salaries in the public schools. So school choice benefits kids and families, obviously, but also benefits the kids who remain in the public schools and the teachers as well, because whether we like it or not, the government school system is not just a monopoly. It's also a monopsony in the labor market. Competition in the market for goods and services benefits customers. Competition in the labor market benefits employees. I mean, just think about the trends over time. In the public school system in America, since 1970, we've increased per pupil education expenditures by about 152% after adjusting for inflation. Teacher salaries have only increased by about 8% in real terms. So when I hear the teachers complaining about digging into their pockets, maybe they're not earning enough in a certain area after being in the system for so long, and they're so upset with the red tape and the bureaucracy of the government school system, I kind of feel bad for them. But the problem isn't with their competition. The problem is with their employer. It's a monopoly, monopsony in the labor market.
That's interesting. Fascinating stuff. Corey, is there anything else that you think our listeners should know before I let you go? Anything about the midterms or anything that you'd like to plug?
I mean, we need to look at, we're going to see the new shift in leadership and legislatures all across the country. And it'll be fun to look at what's happening this session. But look, Arizona just went all in. They had the slimmest of GOP majorities. They have a one-seat majority in the Senate and the House. They have the governor's office. It's a purple state in Arizona, the slimmest of majorities. And they just went all in on school choice, the gold standard. Every single family, regardless of income, background, or zip code, can take their kids' education dollars to the public, private, charter, or home-based option for their kids. And if Arizona can do it, every red state should be able to do it in the country. So I'm looking at you, Florida. I'm looking at you, Missouri. I'm looking at you, Texas. Abbott's finally leading on the issue. He's pushing for school choice. He even said in January that this was going to be the swiftest, most powerful push for school choice in Texas history. They have much stronger GOP majorities than in Arizona. If Arizona can do it, states like Texas should be able to do it as well. It's on the Republican Party platform. 88% of Texas Republican primary voters went to the ballot in March of this year saying they support a school choice proposition, which was up 9 percentage points since 2018. There's been a sea change in support for school choice. Parents have woken up. They're never going back to sleep. And we should, politicians would be wise to listen to these parents going forward if they want to have political success as well. It is politically disastrous. I would say a form of political suicide at this point to come out against parental rights in education. So we'll see what happens tomorrow on election day, but parents are the change agent here. And every state should go all in and empower all parents like they did in Arizona.
That's right. Parents are the change agent. Corey DeAngelis, the tip of the spear in the fight for education freedom. Corey, thank you very much for your time today. We're grateful to have you.
Totally. Thank you, Austin.
Thank you very much. Did you like Corey DeAngelis? If you did, give us a like on the stream. Give us a little share. We appreciate you very much for tuning in. All right. Coming up next, entering the Marijuana Thunderdome. Scott Fawn's going to join us here in just a few minutes to talk about midterm madness, what's happening in Mo, what's on the ballot, plus all this weirdness with the Department of Justice sending officials here to my home county, thinking they can get away with it. The Biden administration better go hightail it right back to Washington, D.C., at least according to my Secretary of State, Jay Ashcroft. I don't know if you've got a Jay Ashcroft in your state, but you ought to be jealous of ours. All that and more when we get back on the Wake Up America Show at wakeupamericashow.com. Rise and Freedom, it's 8:03 on a Monday, the day before Election Day. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Wake Up America Show. Yes, today is the day. The exciting news is coming. I can't wait to share with you. I know all the listeners and friends and fans of the show have been waiting. Well, it's going to happen today. I thought we'd have to wait until tomorrow. So make sure you're following me on Twitter, at AP for Liberty, so you can get the news. I think it's coming at either 1 p.m. or 2 p.m. Just be on standby. Just keep hitting refresh, 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 refresh until you see the news. All right. Well, the big news is that the midterm elections are coming tomorrow, and I wanted to speak to somebody who's got more insight into Missouri politics than pretty much anybody. He's the host of the Missouri Times, the publisher of the Missouri Times, excuse me, Scott Vaughn, joining us right now, fresh from his F-150 tour. Scott, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Morning, buddy. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming on, Scott. Let's hit the big story here in Missouri. I mean, nationally, they aren't talking about us like they are in Arizona or in places like, you know, the governor's race in New York and all that kind of stuff. Missouri's Senate race between Trudy Bush Valentine and Eric Schmidt has been sort of, you know, tossed aside from the national media, but it's a big, important race. We might be sending a very strong conservative to Washington, D.C. tomorrow.
I think that when you look back on this race, you're going to send not only a person who's going to gain a lot of stroke in the Senate, a potential person that could be a Senate leader one day, you're sending probably our best real shot at a national figure. I would say even going back to maybe John Ashcroft, if I had to really pick who's going to be a national figure who can maintain respect in the party, who can maintain respect around the country. I think if you look at Eric Schmidt in the state Senate, he found out a way to work with everybody. He left with the respect of both parties. Probably the leadership might have been the most frustrated with him, frankly. He had a lot of respect amongst his colleagues. When he would do some stuff, yeah, you're going to see him on Fox News. He'll find some issue and kind of do the whole let's rile up folks on the internet thing. But he'll also, the things he does seriously, he'll take very serious. I bet this to several folks. Now, look, if you're some right winger who hates everyone and gets mad, you're going to get mad. Trust me, you're going to mad at anybody. At some point, that unicorn you think is the one that ain't going to tick you off will just be, you know, just a pudgy unicorn. It'll be a rhino at some point. And if you're a left winger and you think he's going to go, no, he's probably going to vote pro-life, pro-gun, pro-tax cut. I mean, surprise, surprise. But if you're a person who's just getting up and going to work today and doesn't want the FBI at your polling place out in Wardsville, then he's going to do a great job for you. I think he's the closest thing we could have elected to Roy Blunt in this state, and I think he's going to do a great job. I think the state's going to be very proud. I think he's going to be the guy Democrats are like, well, okay, fine. For Republicans, he's going to be the guy you're like, yeah, that guy's got judgment and sense and delivers.
If you're just and we're speaking to Scott Vaughn. He's the publisher of the Missouri Times in whose building we are enjoying right now and live streaming. If you're appreciating the show and you love the Wake Up America show, then definitely say thank you to Scott Vaughn for that. Scott, now you brought up the whole the FBI being out here in Cole County. The Secretary of State, Jay Ashcroft, tweeted 15 hours ago that there was voter intimidation going on by the Biden's Department of Justice. What is this?
I think what happened was a very politically tone-deaf thing came out of the Kansas City Western District Department of Justice. I think they probably have some legitimate concerns about handicap accessibility. I think there may have been a history of some issues here in Cole County with that, a pretty distant history, but still. So they wanted to come out and observe on Election Day how handicapped people could vote. Well, you know, Jay Ashcroft, being the engineer, brings up a great point. You could have came out at any point in the last 2 years since the last election and checked the hallways or measured, you know, the grade of the inclines. None of that's changed. Like if you voted a polling place here in Cole County, it's the same polling places, the same handicap accessibility. I think there's a real political tone deafness. And I think you have to keep in mind, if you're a U.S. attorney, you're the king. I mean, you can shoot off fireworks if you want to. You can wave the flag. But let's be honest. If you're a U.S. attorney, you have all the power Joseph Stalin had in Russia. If you want to send you to prison, you can. There's nothing you can do. You can't fight the federal government. They'll either bankrupt you or lock you in a cage, if that's what they want to do. Now, most of the time, it's for very good reasons. But then also sometimes they invade former presidents' homes or they want to come out. I think that sometimes folks in those positions, nobody ever tells them no, like Putin. Nobody tells Putin no because he has total power. The Republicans, the law and order, the God-loving Republicans have created a police state called the federal judicial system that is just a lengthy plea bargain process. If you're not Vince McMahon, you can't beat him. So I guess nobody tells Putin no. All power, nobody tells you. So nobody tells the U.S. attorney, hey, this might be a bad look. Not everybody thinks you're the good guy. So I think he's shocked to see, oh, my God, they don't want us there? No. Most folks want the government very far away from them. Since Journal Order 11, most Missourians want the federal government very far away from them. So I think it was a tone-deaf thing in Jay Ashcroft, but, I mean, who's running for governor, jumped all over it. What a great job he's done saying, get out of my county.
Remind me, it's a General Order 11. Was that the one to push the Mormons out of Missouri?
No, that was a different order from the state. General Order 11 was by Lincoln's son-in-law to burn four counties, rape, pillage, and destroy four Missouri counties called the Burnt District, not far from where you're from.
Out there in Cass County.
County and South. They wanted to burn those counties, extinguish any life, kill all the livestock, and run folks out. That's your government, what it did to American citizens.
That's probably my great-grandpa's business out there, Nance Davis. You can find his information out there online on Ancestry.com. He was injured in a battle down in Mississippi. You can text the show this morning at 573-319-1586. If you're just tuning in, we're speaking to Scott Fawn, the publisher of the Missouri Times, about the midterm elections tomorrow. All right, Scott, it's time to put you into the Marijuana Thunderdome. Here we go. I should have had some Tina Turner up there, send him into Thunderdome here. Are we all excited about this? Yeah, I thought so. Scott, let's talk about the marijuana on the ballot, because what's been fascinating about marijuana on the ballot in Missouri is that all my libertarian friends, all my pothead friends, all my pro-legalization friends didn't vote for it. If they voted early, they didn't vote for it. But if they're voting tomorrow, they say they're not going to vote for it. Think it's going to pass?
I mean, I think it will pass. I think it's going to be very close. In Missouri, it's very easy to get a no. Much easier to get a no than a yes. So any kind of organized opposition usually tanks anything on the ballot. This time, it's a weird situation. I mean, I'll just give you my two cents on where it is. There was a system that came together that gave out licenses for medical. The goal behind that was very controlled. So my mom in West Butler County, who's not going to vote for pot ever, she might not be too put out by one store that looks kind of nice and isn't in your face. And a person like me that doesn't care what people smoke could vote for it. But I kind of agree. I've been to Denver. I don't want Missouri to become Denver.
It stinks there. It smells really bad. And as somebody who doesn't necessarily mind cannabis, I'll just say that, like, when you walk down the streets, it's just... it's a little too pungent.
Yeah, I have to say, I'm German. My elbow bends at the perfect angle for these 12-ounce curls. I'm I promise you, I'll smoke not one more ounce of pot, whether it passes or not. I don't mind if anybody else does. And I don't really think you should have to get a doctor's note to do it. But in Jeff City, you drive down Missouri Boulevard. There's one place. It's off to the side. It's an old Taco Bell, I think they redid. Classy, nice. Nobody's minded. I think they've done a great job introducing marijuana legally in a way that not your average Missourian isn't angry about. Now, you have some folks that didn't get licenses. Probably the program would be better if the old boys would have gotten a back room and divvied them out the old-fashioned way. You know, Harry Truman and those boys didn't do too bad at life. I think that the program would have been in a better place if they would have had a more corrupt system. Because some of these people from out of state you would have never gave a license to. You would have gave them to your local folks who wouldn't complain. But you have some folks in Missouri that didn't get licenses that are pretty ticked. And you have some folks that don't want any regulation at all of marijuana. I understand that. I'm generally anti-regulation. And I generally don't care if people smoke pot. So if it fails, I don't mind. I voted for it because I think it's a good way to introduce it. I also think there's this crazy thought that if you vote no today, this legislature, who never passed medical even, is going to come in and pass recreational in some way where you could stick a pot store every 20 feet downtown. That's not real as I see it. Why would a legislator do that? You look at it right now, you get contributions from the medical industry. The organized industry has a pretty good reputation in the Capitol. There was one bill filed that didn't even, I think it might have got a mercy hearing because the guy was a good guy, but it got nowhere close to passing. I'll tell you right now, if someone's telling you, oh, vote no and we'll go pass this in January, I don't care if they do or not, but that's not real. That's just not real. And what you're going to have now, because you have the existing folks that do medical, and you have the folks that didn't get licensed that are ticked off, and the folks that want to probably sell pot in gas stations, right? I mean, most of my friends that are kind of the pot smoking burners, they want pot everywhere. Fine. I kind of don't, but I'm not, it's my preference. I don't have to say you can't legally do it, but I really don't want pot everywhere personally. I kind of like they have beer everywhere, but again, I'm German, so, I think it's what you'll see is a lengthy war between the established industry who can block anything they want to block and the legislators who don't want to tick off their constituents in Willow Springs, Missouri. They don't want to vote for this. It doesn't help them. And you're going to see your kind of, it's going to come back to your sort of your potheads versus your corporates. And let me tell you who wins that in Missouri. the corporates ultimately. But after a lengthy fight, if it doesn't pass tomorrow, we'll have this conversation for the next 5 years and it'll still be the existing medical system.
What I find is so fascinating about this is that it's usually, you know, kind of Baptist and bootleggers kind of a deal. But here in Missouri now, it's the pro-legalization and the anti-legalization people who are working together on this to try and stop that on the ballot. Because, you know, the pro-legalization people want it, like you said, and people like myself, gas stations. You should be able to buy it at a gas station. But, you know, I don't like the whole, you know, corporate aspect of it, the way that it's a takeover. There have been accusations that the people who wrote the ballot language here were just doing it so that they could personally enrich themselves.
And, duh.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course.
And they paid for it, right?
Yeah, for sure. For
I mean, the real problem Missouri has is that our constitutional amendment system, this referendum system, is ridiculous. I mean, it's just, it makes no sense. There's you should never have this many topics that you could squeeze in. It should be, in my opinion, something where if it's a constitutional amendment, yes, make marijuana being legal to me is a fine thing for a constitutional amendment if enough folks find the thing. Now, right now, no one in North Missouri or Southeast Missouri ever signed these petitions. You don't have to get signatures in North and Southeast Missouri. It's ridiculous. Yet we have to go by the laws the rest of you put on the ballot and vote on. Number two, if you really look at it, if you just said yes, should marijuana be legal, yes or no, fine. Then you let the legislature pass the rules and regs. That's a much better system than letting the entire rules and regs be written into a lengthy ballot measure. That's the thing the Republicans should fix. Who cares about pot? Let's talk about just in general. We have a much better state government. If you allow the folks, of course, let folks make the overall general decisions. Then let them vote for people to make all the little sub rules and regs.
Now, as we're speaking to Scott Fawn, he's the publisher of the Missouri Times. You can read at MissouriTimes.com. Scott, is there anything that you think that people should know before I let you go? Any predictions for tomorrow that you'd like to share about the midterms?
I think you're looking at Schmidt probably plus 15. I think the wave has been building. I think when this primary was over, the fact is, you know, when Trump was president, he would hurt your feelings, but you give the clerk two 20s, they give you a tank of gas and folded money back. Now you have to swipe your card twice to fill up your truck. Whoever won that primary, I think even Eric Greitens would have won this in this climate. I think the fact when it wasn't Eric Greitens, you could have just picked any Republican out of any courthouse in the state.
It's a big statement that Eric Greitens could have still won.
I think he could have still won. I think that any Republican in any courthouse was going to win by 10. Eric Schmidt's a very good politician. One of the most amazing feats when you look back on this whole cycle is that he won that wildly competitive primary by 20 points. An amazing political feat. I think you're seeing the send-off of a national figure now. And I don't know what politics will be 6 years from now, but I know it'll change. It won't be what it is today. And I think you're sending somebody that has the intellectual and the political skills to probably be successful for Missouri within whatever those changes look like.
That's Scott Fawn, the publisher of the Missouri Times. Thank you very much for your time, Scott. We appreciate you coming on the show today. Great analysis.
Always fun, buddy. Looking forward to the announcement.
Yeah, the big announcement happening later today. You don't want to miss it. Make sure you're following me over at AP4Liberty on Twitter, where I will drop the big news. All right, coming up next, our favorite squiggly line guy coming up on the show to talk about Elon's reign of terror on Twitter. Have you been following what's going on? He banned, the lady who held up the Trump head. You're probably happy about that. And then some random internet podcaster nobody ever heard of anyway, H3H3. He's got millions of supporters and followers, way more than I do. Well, he's banned from Twitter too. Well, what's going on? Why are all these famous people getting banned from Twitter? I thought that comedy was supposed to be legal. We'll talk to Squiggly Line Guy about that when we get back on the Wake Up America Show at wakeupamericashow.com. Clear. Thank you, Scott. Appreciate it. I know you're busy, so thank you for your time. Yeah, man. That was good stuff. Here, I'll let you out.
I'm going to grab some. You
there? Good morning. It's 8:22. You're watching and listening to Austin Peterson. Thanks so much for tuning into the show. We're glad to have you here. It's a YouTube blitz this week. We're asking our listeners to please share and like and subscribe and comment over on YouTube. Watch the show over on YouTube at youtube.com/AP4Liberty to help us to get to monetization. We're almost there. We've been super grateful to have all of our friends joining us over there. Of course, you can listen and like and subscribe and comment on any of our other social platforms. If you've got something against YouTube, that's fine. We've got you over on Rumble as well as on Facebook and on Twitter as well. So we'd like to see you over there. Joining us now live to talk about Elon Musk's reign of terror. It's my good buddy and making his first appearance on this show, Squiggly Line Guy. Good morning, Squigs. Thanks so much for joining us. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Austin. To all the listeners, the good people of America, except for communists, I hope you never wake up. Good morning.
Good morning, Squiggly. That's quite an introduction there. Squiggs, you've been enjoying Elon Musk's reign of terror, and he is trending this morning on Twitter for apparently having suspended, maybe banned permanently. I'm not quite sure. Maybe you can fill us in on this. One was a YouTuber by the name of Ethan Klein, H3H3 fame. YouTube, people who are familiar with online stuff will know. Other people might not care. Kathy Griffin, who famously was in trouble for holding up the Donald Trump's bloody head that got her in quite a bit of hot water years back. But now both of these people are maybe permanently suspended from Twitter for impersonation. What's the story behind this one? Can you help us suss it out? What's going on?
Yeah, so these are very, very unfunny leftists. Elon Musk said that Kathy Griffin was suspended for impersonating a comedian. What they were doing was they were impersonating, changing their name to Elon Musk and their profile picture to Elon Musk profile picture, and putting out messages to vote for Democrats and things like that, and we're trying to get their followers to retweet them. People who have impersonated Elon Musk have been getting banned on Twitter well before Elon took over, because it was very, very common for crypto scammers to use his likeness to try and scam people for fake cryptocurrency schemes. But, they thought that they would try and do a little bit of a virtual electioneering, changing, their name and profile picture to Elon Musk, and they got banned for doing it.
So essentially, the new rules under Elon Musk are that if you impersonate someone, this is something that can suspend you permanently. But I saw Elon had posted a tweet where he said that he would bring her back for $8.
For $8. Right. Yeah, he's joking around more with the $8 stuff. But it's kind of funny because the whole parody thing where you have to have, the account, if you're going to impersonate, it has to be clearly marked as a parody. That's not new. That's always been, Twitter's position on impersonations and parodies, is that you have to have it clearly marked as parody.
Now, well, here's the thing, Squiggs, and I'd love to hear your take on this one, too. The thing is about the blue check marks, and obviously I am a blue check mark, which puts me in the rank of the first people to go to the gulag when the proletariat populist revolution takes place and all of the blue check mark journalists on Twitter are are killed in a mass fire. So I'm definitely on the chopping block here. The problem with this is that when you add verification for absolutely anybody, when you can buy verification, it does lend itself to a situation where you can be impersonated. In fact, the very first blue check mark that I got was on Facebook, and it wasn't because I was famous. I wasn't. It was before I ran for president. It was because so many people, mostly my opponents in the libertarian movement, were impersonating me, creating all of these fake pages. The point of verification was supposed to prove that, hey, this is a person. This is the person who they say they are. So in some ways, I think that what Elon Musk is proposing here, being able to just buy verification, it makes it a little bit problematic when it comes to the question of impersonation. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yeah, I think, I've heard them run some ideas that, that, for example, when you're verified, it's going to use the name that, on your, ID or on your card that you verify with. And if you change that, you will temporarily lose your blue check, pending validation of that.
Now, when it comes to how he's been treated by the media, it's amazing how much an enemy of the left Elon Musk has become, not because of his policy changes, right? Because, he voted for and supported Andrew Yang. He was a Democrat at the time. Elon Musk supports universal basic income. I mean, in terms of climate change, if climate change is one of the biggest issues that the left is in favor of, Elon Musk is on board with them. He's right. Literally the founder of and manufacturer of electric cars trying to save the environment. But why do you think the left hates him so much?
Because he's the richest man in the world. That's it. That's it. It comes from that whole eat the rich mentality, where you know, it comes just from their place of envy, from the economic fixed pie fallacies where, you know, when was the last time Elon Musk had his boot on your neck? You know, when's the last time he forced you to buy a Tesla or do anything? You know, so it just comes from envy of wealth.
Yeah, it does. If you just tuning in, we're speaking to my buddy Squiggly Line Guy about Elon Musk's reign of terror on Twitter. Now, he's been engaging in mass layoffs. I just read the news yesterday. I'm going to talk about this a little bit later on the show. That Meta is now announcing that they're going to engage in mass layoffs, could be even more layoffs than Twitter is engaged in. The social media world is really being shaken up, Squiggs. And, you know, you could chalk this up to bad business decisions. Yeah, Mark Zuckerberg has invested too much money in the metaverse, or, you know, the weird headset thing that people aren't really into. You could say that, you know, Twitter has made, you know, poor decisions when it comes to censoring people. But I mean, social media itself is changing. And I find this fascinating, Squiggs, without going in too much of a tirade or a liberty rant. You know, for years, a lot of libertarians and Republicans especially were saying that, you know, social media has too much power and needs to be regulated. You know, it's wrong when the government is telling the social media to censor people, as they did, and Mark Zuckerberg admitted on Joe Rogan. But to what do you attribute the failure, the sort of flux of social media, people moving away from some of these legacy platforms into different ones? What do you think this is all about?
You know, I think we're at a very interesting time in social media where we went, you know, through, you know, several years of, you know, social media, you know, growth and expanding. But I think social media, as far as expanding, doing something new ideas, that they've really just plateaued, and they found themselves, you know, to be bloated. You know, one thing that Elon was saying about Twitter was they had like 10 managers for every one coder. So it's just kind of, so you have just a lot of people on just bloated projects that probably just weren't even really doing a whole lot. You know, get the grind, get the axe. You know, it's kind of like, they went through these periods of growth, but then found out, you know, all of a sudden you've just got a bunch of people not doing anything anymore because it's plateaued.
Squiggly, is there anything else that you think our listeners should know before we let you go?
Vote red tomorrow. Get the Democrats out. Vote red or vote libertarian. If you've got libertarians running, just vote for anybody but the Democrats.
Anybody but Democrats. That's a message that I can certainly get behind. Squiggly Line Guy, thank you for your time and for your friendship, and thank you for fighting for freedom. We appreciate you, sir.
Yep. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much. Guy Squiggs. Now, he's gotten banned a lot on those platforms, I'll tell you. He has been on the end of the axe. So, well, maybe he'll bring Squiggly Line Guy back. We'll see. All right. Coming up next, my interview with Paul Kertman to talk about the midterms and pandemic amnesty. Paul Kertman says people should go to jail for what they did during the pandemic. Talk about all that and more on the Wake Up America Show at wakeupamericashow.com. Good morning, Rise and Freedom. I'm Austin Peterson. Thanks so much for tuning into the Austin Peterson Show. We're so glad to have you here. Welcome, welcome. Love hearing from our listeners. They've been sending us text messages this morning. Somebody was asking about Eric Schmidt. Isn't he going to go up against big tech? That's what he says he's going to do. There may not be much big tech left to go around. We're going to talk in just a moment about Meta announcing potentially thousands of layoffs. From the Wall Street Journal, I'll talk about that in just a couple of minutes. Another listener texted in this morning, says that I thought that Squiggly Line Guy, the guy that I interviewed earlier, was gone from social media because he chased pedos. Was that the Squiggly Line Guy? That's correct. Yeah, Squiggly Line Guy got busted on Facebook for basically outing pedos. Yeah, it was pretty wild stuff. Let's move on over to this story at the Wall Street Journal. Facebook parent Meta is preparing to notify employees of large-scale layoffs this week. Social media's planned cuts expected to affect many thousands of its workforce. I do want to say and extend my hand of courtesy to those who are to be will be affected, who have been affected by the layoffs at Twitter, and who will be affected by the layoffs over at Meta. To everyone who lost their job at Twitter and is about to get the axe over at Facebook, just remember, we're all in this together. Delicious tea. Spilling that delicious tea. All right, who's excited for Facebook and Meta to get their, and Twitter to have this comeuppance. Who agrees with me that this was a long time coming? This has been too long in plans and preparation that the social media companies have gotten away with their censorship, have gotten away with playing partisanship. And listen, you know, private companies, they can do what they want. Well, the left has been saying that for years after censorship policies have been enacted solely on one side. Well, now the left is starting to see it happening to them on their side. And I don't think they like it very much. Most importantly, though, the lesson from all of this, the free market works if you give it time. It reminds me of this quote by Thomas Sowell, and he said that just because the market isn't giving us the results that we hope doesn't mean that the government would do any better. And I think that applies to social media. Don't you agree? Look what's happening right now. This is a perfect example why we didn't want to let these, you know, Republicans that we like take control of these social media platforms, writing regulations and legislations to try and accomplish what the market is already accomplishing right now as we speak. I've got like 18 hours left of my live stream ban. I evaded this ban for like almost 60 days. 60 days getting out of Meta jail in like 18 hours, which is good. Perfect timing for my new announcement. It's coming later this afternoon. Aren't you excited? It's going to be, it affects you. It's not just about me. It's about you too. So you get some exciting news. It has to do with you, the Cantina crew. How are you going to get the news? Well, you're going to have to follow me at AP for Liberty on Twitter to get it. If you don't like Twitter, you don't want to follow over on Twitter, I'll post it on my Facebook too at AP for Liberty, where I'm at everywhere. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all over the place. It's been a really great Monday morning, wouldn't you say? I think that it's time to go, because I actually have to write a press release for this news. It's so big. So once I get off the show, I'm going to write the press release, send it out to all the newspapers to let them know. But you'll know first, I promise. And then tomorrow morning, one show, I'll do my show in the morning. Then I got to go somewhere. And then I'll be doing election night coverage on Tuesday night. Here, there, everywhere. I wish I could tell you more, but I have to tell you the news first, and then I can tell you what's happening tomorrow on Election Day. Bad news is you might not get a live show on Wednesday morning, but the news is good enough that it makes it worth it. I know, I'm keeping you all in suspense. I'm sorry. I know. You'll just have to wait until tomorrow morning if you don't follow me on Twitter or on Facebook. All right. Thank you so much, and we'll see you tomorrow on WakeUpAmericaShow.com.